route.
And you say the
Greenway.
That the neighborhood didn't get involved, wasn't involved in that discussion? Or?
Not since the spring. Okay. I mean, it was. I think it was put on the back burner, and then we just recently found out what the preferred designation was. And there hasn't been any PBOT meetings or design meetings yet. I know we were told in the spring that once the process started, if the gas tax was passed, that there would be meetings around what that would look like for the neighborhood in terms of the diverters or stop signs or speed bumps or different measures throughout the neighborhood. So our main concern is just being a part of that process as this moves forward and not being uninformed about what's happening.
Thank you very much.
We still have to make the decision about whether it's Northeast 7th or Northeast 9th, and obviously we've heard a lot about those options. But definitely, I mean, once that decision is finally made, we want to involve the neighborhood in the actual design process.
But how would the decision be made?
I think it's up to us. I think we've got a recommendation that it's 7th, but I think actually it's up to us.
But as was stated when we had the discussion in the spring, there was an expectation that the community folks were going to be involved in that. We'll look into it anyway. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Peggy Moretti, the Executive Director of Restore Oregon, a nonprofit that works statewide to preserve and pass forward the historic places that make our communities livable and sustainable. I'm here today to enthusiastically endorse the proposed amendments to lower the FAR and height limits in the Northwest Alphabet Historic District and Irvington Historic District. This is highly important if we want to fulfill the comp plan policy objective of preserving historic buildings and the character of our historic districts. And inherent in that need is the assurance of compatibility of the new construction. I would further point out that this adjustment does not conflict with the city's other worthy goals of density and affordability. To say that preservation is in conflict with those things is a very false dichotomy. I would point out a few supporting points. The Alphabet District is already the densest district in the city, and Irvington is number 2. These are already very dense districts. With proposed transfer bonuses that would still be in play, that the FAR for new development could still reach 5-1. So we're not literally limiting new buildings to 2 stories. They have that transferable FAR is still going to increase their height to be in line with what has already exists in that district, existing historic buildings. And if we leave in place current zoning, that is going to generate development proposals that are pretty certainly going to be rejected by Landmarks Commission. We are setting up a continual round, case after acrimonious case, coming before City Council for resolution. I don't think that sets the Landmarks Commission up very, very well to do their job. I also think it's important to note that taken all together, all of Portland's historic districts represent less than 2% of our total land area. We are not talking about a huge swath of this city. They contain, however, the majority of our historic resources. So giving them a little protection is not going to stymie our quest for affordable housing. Furthermore, it makes little sense to me that advocates pick some of the most expensive real estate or land in the city in which to locate affordable housing. That kind of goes against my logic. And I kind of have to throw out the question, why is the central city, which is already dense, bearing the bulk of the burden of adding more density while outlying neighborhoods that are crying for new and better development seem to be going wanting here? I think we should be focusing on making Portland's outer neighborhoods as lovely and livable and dense as the inner city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Richard Allen. I'm here for American Waterways. My testimony concerns property at 110 Southeast Carruthers and 250 Southeast Carruthers. From that location, American Waterways has for 20 years operated a successful cruise vessel business under the Portland Spirit banner. Our concern today is specifically with the mapping of the major public trail across the riverfront of the property and how the city's desire for that trail, which dates back to the city's 1987 Willamette Greenway plan, conflicts with American Waterways' obligation to comply with federal requirements applicable to our operations under a post-9/11 federal law, the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002, or MTSA. MTSA requires covered vessels and facilities to submit a facility security plan to the Coast Guard for approval. Under the MTSA, the certificated passenger capacity of at least two of our vessels triggers the requirement for a facility security plan, and we have to be able to operate in compliance with that Coast Guard approved plan in order to be able to operate our vessels. A few key points about the facility security plans. First, they have to fully describe a suite of security measures for the facility to comply with. Second, Homeland Security and the Coast Guard can at any time change the security requirements as threats change. And third, and this is the really the kicker, is that American Waterways is prohibited from disclosing the provisions in its facility security plan except in very limited circumstances. I've been doing work for them since 1997. I don't know what's in the plan. They've never discussed it with me, and they can't. So, an unrestricted public access trail across the riverfront of the property is going to make it, I think, very difficult to operate in compliance with the MTSA. So we would either like the trail removed from our property, or in the CC 2035 process, to have provisions in 33272, which deals with trails, to exempt MTSA subject properties or to allow MTSA subject properties to have a special type of easement where you can actually close it off if it's necessary to do so for MTSA purposes.
So I might ask you to, if you can, maybe you've already had this discussion, to follow up a bit with the Planning Bureau staff. I mean, I've heard this concern, and I'll confess to not understanding all the technicalities of it, but I do spend a lot of time on the water, and I can certify that there are lots of places in the United States where it's possible to walk laterally along a riverbank and still get to a ship. So I must assume that other carriers are somehow surmounting this security requirement without canceling out the ability of the public to move up and down the riverbank on a trail. So again, just looking at the context, you're talking about national regulations here. Spent a lot of time on a lot of waterfronts. Boston comes to mind, Baltimore comes to mind, San Diego comes to mind, and so on. So somehow the public is allowed relatively free and open access up and down those waterfronts while still having ships subject to these regulations docking at proprietary docks that are perpendicular to those walkways. So
I understand that.
I appreciate
that,
if you could
Mr.
carry
Mayor.
That technical conversation on a bit with our staff, because we obviously don't want to be contrary to federal law, but we also don't want to be missing an opportunity here.
I understand. I think there may be a difference between what we see when we see the public seeming to have free and open access and having a recorded easement that says we have a legal obligation to give the public access. At least I think the rules currently are from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. It may be a different situation, but we'll certainly work with staff on that.
It'd help us to understand really what our boundaries are here. So thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Tamara DeRitter, Marty Suchek, and Donna Bestwick. 36, 37, 38, and they'll be followed by Catherine Christensen, Debbie T. Gefford, and Stan Green, 39, 40, and 41.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Tamara DeRitter. I'm representing Rose City Park Neighborhood Association as their chairperson, and also representing myself as the principal for TDR and Associates Planning. First off, I'll be representing the Neighborhood Association, and they have requested your support for the Planning and Sustainability Commission decision in 2011 not to rezone the 60th Street Station area just yet. Right now, the density that's being called for will change R5 to mixed-use commercial 2 and R1, higher densities, and the 60th Avenue between Sandy Boulevard, between Halsey and the station area at I-84, has 2 foot wide sidewalks. So to rezone it, then you'd have a smattering of improvements with the developments, but nothing consistently all the way through. I've been working with PBOT in getting funding, looking at funding for that area. Once that those improvements are in place, then it won't be a safety hazard, and we can rezone. But it's one of the few areas in the comprehensive plan that has not rezoned over the last 20 years, and for good reason, because it's all working-class housing, and some of the streets just do not even have sidewalks. Second, the board has supported a revised requirement for off-street parking where you need to have 3 parking spaces for every 4 dwelling units for mixed use. And this is in support of your own study on how many dwelling units have housing, rental housing, have dwelling units. It's 70% of all renters have at least one car, vehicle. And so the question is, how do we address that with mixed use? And the requirements you have right now for 500-foot setbacks from Sandy Boulevard are minimum, like right now at 19 parking spaces for 89. And as TDR and Associates, excuse me for going over just a little bit, I want you to draw your attention to the Title 33 zoning code that does not include the policy number 9.58 requiring adequate parking for off-street parking. It does not include that in any of the documentation, and therefore it does not comply with the comprehensive plan. And I therefore request continuance of this public hearing until such language can be inserted and reviewed by the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Could you just give me that code number again?
Yeah, it's the reference number is 9.58. Off-street parking.
Yeah, and what's
of the comprehensive plan?
Yes, yeah. I know. But what's the zoning code piece that you want? That you think doesn't comply with it?
Well, it's the
The elements of
TSP
title. Let's see, 33.266.110.
Thank you.
B. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tamara. Welcome. No, really.
Hi, I'm Donna Bestwick, and I'm a 35-year resident of Multnomah Village. And we're all painfully aware that you are in a constant tug-of-war between citizenry, development, and interests of Portland. And while I am compassionate of that, I won't let you off the hook on your parking requirements. The lady next to me here mentioned them. Every neighborhood in Portland is very distressed about the parking situation. And, you know, we don't wear the suits of lawyers, of developers, of people with a personal financial interest. We're the people who live here in Portland. We have for many years, we've paid taxes that support all of us and take care of all of us. And we are a majority of Portland, a single-family dwellers who have faithfully paid our taxes all these years. And it looks to us like we have the least voice in the system of a city that's supposed to work for us. You know, the only thing standing between developers, and I won't call them mercenary or anything like that, because this is America and they have the freedom to make as much money as they can. You know, once an area is overdeveloped, it's not going to go back. And this business of not having enough parking for a one-to-one, you say it has to do with mass transit. And the mass transit is fabulous in Portland. I rode the bus down here, and it's wonderful. But people are not going to get rid of their cars. I am not going to take a bus to visit my Aunt Gladys in Spokane. I'm not going to visit my cousin in Montana on a bus and then not have a vehicle when I get there. We are all in that position. I'm going to ask again, how many of you on the council have cars? You all do. We all do. And so what you're doing is you're putting incredible pressure on neighborhoods and street parking. They're all, people are going to be parking in front of our homes. And so with reference to the parking policy, I'm going to use Irma Bombeck's quote again. Please stop peeing on our shoes and telling it's raining.
Thanks very much. You know, I just think it's important to note that this is a difficult issue for the council on the parking issue, but most of the advocacy that we're hearing on the other side is not from developers. It's from transportation advocates like Portlanders for Parking Reform, who are disinterested in the question of this or that development, but believe that we should be working towards a future where we are walking more and using transit more and driving less. So it really isn't a tug of war in this case between neighborhoods and developers. It's a tug of war between two different visions of how the transportation system should work that I've been hearing from, and we've had a lot of testimony on the plan on the other side, but I think actually none of it from developers. So it's, I don't want you to think of it, I hope you don't think of it, because I think that's inaccurate to think of it as that. That's the debate. It really isn't between neighborhoods and developers. It's between neighbors and neighbors. Doesn't make it any easier for us, but I think that's a more accurate characterization of the debate.
I agree 100%. But what the lack of parking allows developers to do is increase their footprint. So if they had to, if they were going to build a structure anywhere and had to have at least one for one parking, they couldn't go as big on the footprint.
No
so
question.
That's where they gain the advantage.
Yeah, I understand that.
Mass transit and driving a car are two separate issues. Please don't tie them together, because we do take, I walk everywhere. I don't take my car to the garage 3 to 4 days a week, and many of us don't. But I still have a car. That's not going to go away.
Yeah, understood. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
And there's so many people parking now, it's hard to walk in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But I will start my testimony now, Carl.
Yeah. Put your name in the record.
Marty Suchek. I'm here representing the Multnomah Neighborhood Association. And I find it disconcerting that this, all of these things are just one council agenda item. Each one of these we should be able to testify on. You know, I know we can send it in, but there's something different about actually being here. We have a big problem with the mixed use issue. We don't want to be a center. We've said we want to be a corridor, but we really don't want to be that. We want to be a main street, and we're sorry Metro decided to let Portland do away with this quaint concept that reflects our village. But I also want to comment on previous issues. I don't want to be the one to tell Smile that a design overlay doesn't get them anything. They need a plan district. It's kind of deja vu, Mayor, all over again, because you and I were sitting in this very room. I think Commissioner Salzman was there, and Vera Katz, and James Francesconi, et cetera, when you said in 2001, it called the planner in and said, is there a height limit on a design overlay? And he said, well, he didn't have the code then, but yes, he thought it did. So you said, let's, you know, have a design overlay on Multnomah. And the mayor agreed. And it was therefore done. I was just reviewing the testimony. I have testimony from there. A design overlay hasn't helped us preserve our character. So I think what we really need is a plan district. And the mixed-use process has taken this thing like a chainsaw clear across every neighborhood in the city. They came to Multnomah. They had two groups. They walked people around the city. And two different times, they went down to Southwest 40th, where Gabriel Park is, and where the last pervious surface, truly pervious surface, is, and said, what about a Walmart here at different times? So what we believe is that the Planning Commission and the principals in the Planning Bureau have a different idea of what it should be, what Multnomah should be. What we would like to see is a plan district where we get businesses together, people together, et cetera. And then the other thing I really compelled to say all the time is there's a false dichotomy set up. It's actually a logical fallacy between trees, for example, density, single-family houses. It's not one or the other. We can, with intelligent creative planning, we can have trees, even on 5,000-square-foot lot. We can have great development. We have had great multifamily development in Multnomah since the Southwest Plan. The other thing I hate is this NIMBYism, and I heard an advocate for the poor, I think, refer to NIMBYism. I'm really getting sick of that. There is some NIMBYism. In the 20-odd years I've been busy in this activism, I've seen maybe a dozen true NIMBYs. They don't want that in their backyard. We want some of the things in our front yard. I think when you attack people for being NIMBYs, that's logical fallacy number 7, as I remember from my philosophy course. It's saying you attack the man, you attack the messenger, you do not engage the argument. So I'd like to see all of this accusation blank about NIMBYs or about, you know, I don't want to say Neanderthals. They seem to be smarter than we give them credit for, and even us. But the Cro-Magnons were not that. We want to protect the UGB. We want creative planning that keeps our neighborhood a walkable place and lets it develop in a smart way, truly smart way.
Thank you.
And it's nice to see you 20-something years later.
We've all been at this for, some of us have been at this for a while.
Yes, and we should tell Smile they should ask for a plan district. Maybe we could get one. Nice to see you up there, too.
Continue to be involved. I've always said that if you don't care about what goes on in your backyard, then who will?
Right.
So you have to come and advocate for your
right.
So thank you.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thank you all.
Next three are 39, 40, and 41, Catherine Christensen, Debbie T. Geffard, and Stan Green. And they'll be followed by 42, Lois O'Hara, 43, Eliza Greenstadt, and 44, Mark P. O'Dono.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. My name is Catherine Christensen, and I, too, am from the Multnomah neighborhood. And I appreciate your listening to my testimony today. What I wanted to talk to you about was the CIP should maintain a list of communities. And I'm going to read you what I want to say about this. We're concerned that the August 2016 recommended draft of the Community Involvement Program allows the city to determine what is a community without public transparency. The definition of community as a group of people with a shared sense of identity or belonging is so broad that without further definition, the public cannot understand which groups of people with shared identities or belonging have standing in the SIP as communities. Basic questions about who any given group of people with a shared sense of identity or belonging, what is the name of the group? How is it determined that people in the group share the sense of identity or belonging? What is the sense of identity or belonging? Who speaks for the group? And how the group makes decisions or adopts positions are left unanswered. The SIP needs to be more transparent in defining community because community appears to be the basis for the SIP. The Multnomah Neighborhood Association is requesting that, at a minimum, the SIP maintain a list of communities that have standing in the SIP as communities, provide procedures used to add and remove communities from the list, and clarify how membership in a community is determined so that any individual may unambiguously determine whether or not they belong to a given community and whether they belong to more than one community, and a report on the annual basis of the funding that communities on the list receive from the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Christensen, have you already sent that in?
We will send it in.
Thank you.
I'd really
appreciate it. Thank you. That's a piece that I'm taking a particularly close look at, so thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks. I'm Sean Green. I'm a longtime Irvington resident. I have several points that I wanted to raise to council that I'll include in my email testimony, but I just mentioned the most important one right now. There's a PSC proposal that the city council accept Northeast 7th Avenue as, quote, the preferred route for the Greenway alignment that previously was Northeast 9th Avenue. And PBOT language around this issue is, quote, staff responses that we need to conduct a proper study of the effects of various diverter treatments on traffic patterns in the area of question and a detailed traffic analysis. PBOT would need to conduct a full public process to assess various options and weigh the benefits and impacts to the public. during the TSP Major Projects List adoption process earlier in 2016, City Council amended the 7th, 9th Neighborhood Greenway project to identify both routes as potential alignments subject to further study. The designation of 7th Avenue as a preferred route and major city bikeway is inappropriate given that that study has never taken place. There's been no community involvement. I think that this should be deferred until that traffic analysis and study has taken place and there's been opportunity for community input.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Debbie Thomas-Shiffrard. I'm here primarily to focus on the FAR modifications proposed. There are 9 C zones on this list, and 5 of them are upgraded. 1 stays the same, but 3 are downgraded. The city is talking all about the density needs, mainly in housing, but also in commercial and services. We talk about new codes and requirements for unreinforced masonry buildings. We talk about bonus FAR to encourage certain kinds of development. The zoning changes proposed suggest changes that would lower density in many areas that we as taxpayers have spent many years at improving and put many resources into infrastructure and amenities in those areas. My comments are not spot property accommodations, as someone suggested. It's not just Irvington and Northwest Portland. It goes all over the city and affects many property owners, Northwest, Northeast, St. John's, where they desperately need density. You're suggesting devaluation of properties and lessening the use of our city's infrastructure that everyone pays for. In your proposed modifications, CS, CX, and CG are the only ones that the FAR is penalized or lowered. The others have been increased. I hope this is an oversight that will be recognized and changed and not adopted. Specifically regarding CS to CM2, my first question is why? It penalizes owners that haven't done a recent development. Not to mention that I believe it will create less design diversity since everyone will most likely create boxes that maximize what they can do. Going from CS to CM2 reduces FAR far more than it appears, 3:1 versus 2.5:1. However, it's really much more than that because you have limited the bonuses. So it could have a huge reduction for some properties or planned developments. I'm not sure a lot of people actually realize that part has been slipped in. And do you realize that in some cases, if the property is deemed uneconomical to reinforce, with this change and under the new proposal, you might not even be able to recreate what is there now? Makes no sense to me, goes completely against our coveted urban growth boundary, and I am in strong opposition to this and several other elements, such as CN going to CM1 and limiting retail sales services and office.
Wow. Debbie, this is very, you understand real estate better than most people, so I hope you can give us that statement in writing, because I think we should I'd like to take some time and really look through it. So
okay.
Rather than you finish it now, if you could send it.
Okay, I really was almost finished. My closing is what is with inclusionary zoning requirements, gross sale taxes on corporations that we desperately need to create jobs in our market, along with this suggestion, Portland is going backwards. We need our elected officials to focus on legislation that will encourage methodical growth and the influx of more businesses, not discouraging both. Thank you.
Please send that to us, particularly your analysis of those transitions from CS to CM2 and from CN to CM1. I need to look at the numbers and understand that better.
Okay.
So
Thank you.
Very helpful. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next three are 42, 43, and 44. Lois O'Hara, Eliza Greenstadt, and Mark, I think it's P.O. Dono. And they'll be followed by 45, 46, and 47, Karen Carlson, Greg Thiessen, and Rachel Ginocchio, I believe it is.
Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome. Go ahead. You can go ahead and start while they're coming up.
Hi, I'm Eliza Greenstadt. I'm another person to talk about the Greenway proposal on 7th Avenue. I live on 8th Avenue. I don't have anything written. I would just want to kind of explain that we're concerned about this because we feel like this has been framed as if it's been about which is a better avenue for the Greenway and who's on what side or something, and it's been strangely acrimonious. And really, we found out about this late. We were told that we were going to have some input on the decision. We really haven't. Our requests for information from the city, we haven't received any reply for. We haven't actually seen the plan, a physical plan for this. And our concern is just that if there's going to be a, and I should say I'm also a bike commuter. I bike to work every day. Our concern is that when MLK is blocked with traffic, 7th Avenue is right there. It's a two-lane street. It's one of the few active two-lane streets in our neighborhood. And I've seen it just recently that cars will just go right on there, and it is terrible. They'll zoom along the street when MLK is blocked, and I understand that the residents on that street are alarmed by the increase in traffic that's happened there. But then if there's a proposal to turn that into a greenway or a bike commuter, and there's also some confusion about which it's going to be, because those are very different kinds of streets, then what's going to happen to the traffic that's going along there now? That's what we're concerned about. And I'm all for, and we as a community that's been thinking about this, we are all for having more different kinds of transportation, better bike routes, better pedestrian routes. We're just trying to have more input and more say and to have that be done safely in a way that's not going to cause more problems for our whole neighborhood.
I'm disturbed to hear that you haven't received a response to request for information. Would you mind dropping by my office and leaving your contact information?
Sure.
And
yeah.
Then we'll get back to you and make sure that you get answers to the questions you've been asking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark O'Donnell, and I own property with Tim Ramos at 1727 Northwest Hoyt. And we're here today in opposition to the reduction in FAR from 4 to 1. You know, I dread coming here to see you today. I really do. You know, I grew up in Northwest Portland, and I walked down to my old neighborhood today. I was the last graduating class of St. Patrick's School in 1957. And at that time, I was on the wrong side of the poverty issue. I was on it. My single-parent mother raised four of us, and we all got to go to St. Pat's without paying tuition. We got to go to Friendly House, and we all got to be something in life today because somewhat of the neighborhood we lived in. I'm not going to get into you today about this idea of, like we see in our current presidential campaign of fear, like, if you don't reduce the FAR, Northwest Portland is going to lose all of its historical designations. I've been here before with you, and you I'm sure you remember us. We went out and got Mark Edlin, one of the most competent, integrity, impeccable persons to come in here, and he told you the building didn't work, et cetera, et cetera. We also offered to take care of 100 seniors a year for 10 years, da-da-da-da-da, and we didn't meet the criteria you had. You have well in place ordinances and criteria that protect buildings. Now, what I would like to talk to you about is like the 160 people, at least, that would live in this project. And, you know, we have a tendency in this world today to talk around circles. And I realize that you can have a clash of values. I'm perfectly understandable of that. But we have a housing crisis, as you well know. The number is 23,295 units that we need in this city. We need this for people of extremely low income, which means you make less than $15,000 or $13,000 a year. Our project would be primarily occupied by people in that income category. On the larger scale, I try to think of why someone who makes less money, in effect, is economically excluded from living in Northwest Portland when people come along and have alternatives for them to live there. You know, if you're an elderly citizen, medical concerns are quite a bit. And if you're four blocks from the hospital, that gives you peace of mind. Now, that's on top of the fear of having one foot out the door for no housing. It's also You can walk two blocks to Trader Joe's. You can walk five blocks to Fred Meyer's. You can walk two blocks to the William Temple House that has support services. And there's all kinds of churches and facilities there for people. But if you don't make the economic criteria of affording a $1,600 a month rent with pass-through of all utilities, we're going to shift you to the west side, east side. We're going to shift you to East County. And, you know, you can slice the bread any way you want to slice it. You want to slice it anyway. And since we're limited on time, I can't develop this in depth for you, so I'll give you the conclusion. The conclusion is this reduction in 4-to-1 is economic segregation. When you close Safeways at Beaverton-Hillsdale Highway and Shoals Ferry Road, that has nowhere near the impact when you close Safeways, Target, Albertsons in the East County. Because if you have to take a bus for 20 blocks to take your groceries, that's a lot different than hopping in your car and going down there. So, look, there's plenty of control. You have plenty of control. I'd ask you to remain the flexibility that you have now, the oversight that you have, and that you do not do this. And I will send you a letter on this process, all right? We had no notice that your Planning and Sustainability Committee entertained such a drastic measure. The only reason we got notice was because under the Measure 49, we got notice. Thank you. Any questions?
No, that's good. No, I appreciate it. Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. I think we had called a couple other people. Karen Carlson's in the room. Karen, I think she was called.
Yep. Karen Carlson, Greg Thiessen, and Rachel Giaccio, I believe it is.
Ginocchio.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Good point. Thank you.
And then they'll be followed by Rick Michelson, I can't read the last name, on Northwest Nicolai, and Marianne Terrell Levine.
Okay, we might get everybody in, so welcome.
Okay. Hi again. As you know, NWDA has provided a lot of testimony.
Your name in the record, Karen.
Oops, Karen Carlson, President, NWDA. We provided a lot of testimony. In fact, I don't even know how many times. We've requested and worked with staff for changes in Northwest. We've received many of them. We're very thankful. And there's a few we haven't, but I've handed in some written testimony to ask for your consideration on a couple other things. However, what I guess I would like to address is the FAR. It's not the first time you've heard this. I think right now we are so offended by all of the accusations that we are elitists, and I know there's been article upon article in the newspaper. You know, we're experiencing great growth in our neighborhood, and for the last couple of years, we've added almost 1,200 units. Our biggest dislike about that is none of it's affordable. Right now, we have over 800 regulated affordable housing units in our neighborhood. We've been asking them for them even when other neighborhoods were saying, no, not in my backyard. We said yes in our backyard. The median income in the core of our neighborhood is just under $35,000. And we have a lot of market affordable housing that we're afraid we're going to lose in that core. You know, the Northwest District Plan is the only plan outside the central city that has an affordable housing bonus. We have an affordable housing bonus in our plan district. A few blocks north of the site that keeps being talked about, you could build up to 7-to-1 FAR and 120-foot tall building if you do affordable housing. We've been promoting affordable housing for a long time. We are not NIMBYs. We are not elitists. We were as surprised as they were that there was a project going on. We didn't know anything about this project that has been happening since the spring. And actually, I do think that we may be able to find a solution if we all sit down and talk about it. So I am leaving it as the reason we're trying to do this is because we want to provide certainty to developers and property owners.
Okay. Thank you. And I guess I just want to urge you and the others that are in this debate outside of the five of us, doesn't mean we can't settle it, but if there's further conversations that could be had among people of goodwill that might be able to get to yes in some way that would be helpful to the council, that would be most appreciated.
And that is our plan.
I hope so. Thank you. All right, who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
Mayor Hales, I'm Greg Tyson. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest District Association Planning Committee today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. This is not about the FAR. We have been working also on the institutional zoning project, and you have in hard copy testimony from me and probably also in an email testimony. And our work has led us to conclude that the best response to the challenge of planning for service growth at Legacy Good Samaritan is not to include it in the CIZP. As currently drafted, it does not reflect the unique nature of the Good Samaritan campus as it functions in the Northwest neighborhood. And as drafted, it ignores the unique characteristics of Legacy Good Samaritan. It has this sort of integration into the neighborhood that is not at all campus-like in nature. Even PSU, with its sort of integration into other parts of the city, with the block structure, has blocks in it and streets that are blocked off, and Good Sam only has one that's like that. So its unique grid development pattern provides for multiple access and throughways, and its building sizes and locations that respond to the grid and the surrounding built environment. By not acknowledging these fundamental characteristics, the CIZP will fail to serve the Northwest community. And Legacy Good Samaritan, as they continue to grow and evolve together. What we would like to see is the opportunity to amend the Northwest District Plan, and by doing so, addressing the issues with the Legacy Good Samaritan campus, if you'll call it that, and that would better serve all interests involved. So thank you for your consideration.
Very much. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Rachel Ginocchio. It's Pinocchio, but with a G. You have to own that with that kind of last name. And I'm the community liaison for the Selwood-Moreland Business Association. And earlier in the day, you heard from David and Ellen from SMILE, and I am here to support their testimony. It's a pleasure to sit here today to present a unified neighborhood testimony. We urge the PSC to recognize two vital aspects of our community when finalizing the zoning codes. The first is that the commercial corridors run right through the residential streets in our neighborhood. That's what makes it so lovely and charming, that you can walk to everything and anything you need. But what this means is that residential and commercial properties often abut one another. So height of commercial buildings becomes the overriding issue that comes up. So our neighborhood's easy compromise is to oppose the additional 2 feet of additional height for tall first floors and oppose applying the bonus height to the step-down height when commercial properties abut residential properties. Additional height is acceptable if it's a commercial property abutting another commercial property. This gets me to the second vital aspect of our neighborhood. Our business corridors also intersect one another, so commercial properties also abut one another. This means that one commercial property can have an overlay, and even though it shares a wall with another commercial property, that commercial property might not have an overlay. So having a design overlay or a Main Street overlay on some properties, but not all commercial properties, creates this situation of have and have nots, and it can impact the future property values of the buildings that, again, are right next to each other. And so we recommend a de-overlay, and we recommend applying it uniformly to the neighborhood. And I know that the person that just spoke talked about a plan district, so I'll have to connect with her and find out what that is about. But thank you for this and other opportunities to provide neighborhood input into the zoning process.
Thank you. It'd be interesting to look at the numbers, but I suspect almost all the commercial properties abut residential properties.
They do.
I can't think of very many that wouldn't.
Nope. And there are some commercial properties that abut other commercial properties, and we're saying, great, that's a great place to add density and to add height. But when you're adding height to commercial properties that is blocking the light and invading the privacy of residentials, that's where the conflict comes. But we finally, over the last few months, have worked together, the property owners, the business owners, and the residents, to talk to each other, and we realized that that's what the issue was. It was the height of these new buildings that are abutting the residential buildings, that it's a huge problem because our neighborhood is this little peninsula, and from park to park, it's all right in there, which makes it charming and wonderful to live. But yes, it's been great working together to get to this place.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Good work.
The next three are Rick Michelson, Jim Sovimas, and Marianne Terrell Levine. And then the last three I showed signed up are Alan Brown, Brainerd Brower, and Scott Eaton.
Welcome.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'll start. I'm Rick Michelson. I'm here to talk about the Alphabet District, but I want to start more generally. I believe that providing affordable housing is one of the most important things we can do. In fact, I made my largest political donation ever to support the bond campaign. However, I'm really concerned that at this time of crisis, affordable housing and its need has begun to trump every other goal. And I want to remind us that we're planning for the next 100 years. And while we have a crisis today, we should not allow one goal of our many to trump everything else, to abandon our system of corridors and centers, to do other things that are not consistent, because we need to all work together and continue to do that. I also want to remind you that this proposal is about one half of one historic district in a city where only 3% of the land is in historic districts. In Manhattan Island, 27% of Manhattan Island is historic districts. So we're way down here, and the amount we're protecting doesn't make very much difference. This proposal is about truth in zoning. Too many times I get calls from realtors for saying they've got this great property on Kearney Street, and I could build an FAR 4-to-1, and that I should go ahead and pay this price for it. And I know better, because I know the Landmarks Commission is going to come down and reduce that. But others don't, and they get into the process. They don't know that there's demolition denial potential. They don't know anything about this because they look at the map and it says FAR 4-to-1. One suggestion I've got, if we need to allow some more density in there, is change the map to say FAR 2-to-1 with a footnote that says it can be increased to 3-to-1 with the approval of the Landmarks Commission. One way of doing it. In terms of this particular project, a particular site, I think I could find enough additional density to transfer onto that site to make the project work even if the base FAR is 2-to-1. Other options would be to extend the city's inclusionary zone affordable housing bonus to that site so they can get the density. Finally, we could also include the NWDA affordable housing bonuses and extend them into the historic district. But the most important thing is that the zoning reflect the closest reality to what's desired, what's there today, and does not mislead people. So I'd urge you to do the FAR 2-to-1. Thank you.
That's very helpful.
Thank you very much, and appreciate your offer as well to try to figure out a solution for that particular site. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Hales. First time in front of City Council. I want to talk about properties in Northwest Portland, 3030 Northwest Nicolai, 2123 Northwest Nicolai, 3004 Northwest Roosevelt, and 3032 Northwest Roosevelt. One of your council
your
members.
Name,
give us your name again. I'm sorry.
Jim, and last name spelled T as in Tom, S as in Sam, O-U-M-A-S.
Okay.
One of your city council members happened to encounter me one day and blatantly explained to me how he's going to change my zoning and made me really, really anxious, so I engaged him slightly more and was not interested to find out, but found out that he was seriously going at me tooth and nail. So there's a development coming next to me on a piece of property that Bill Nato's family is deceased, of course, the Nato family owns, and then Lou, my other neighbor, has. And I don't want my zoning changed. Now, what you do on the other side of the street, I can give a damn. That's not my problem. But changing the zoning from what is there now to what's proposed is going to negatively affect the whole damn industrial park. And if it negatively affects them, it will negatively affect me. I'm really, really disgusted with the way I was gone at this. Was not given any opportunity to make a comment on it. Was not notified by anybody, developer or a city council person that seemingly was working for two people in this area. And then recently, none of my neighbors in the industrial park knew anything about this baloney because a lot opposed it. I mean, a real lot. I was at the last Deanna meeting, and nobody saw this as anything good because we all know once you erode the industrial park, get the boundary shorter and shorter, pretty soon we have something called, what was it, the moss in the trees over by Bullseye Glass that made that lady cry on television. Nobody offered here any solution to the problem. Our fine governor, Kate Brown, didn't go, well, you need some scrubbers. Here's $8 million. We'll give you a low interest or no interest loan. Fix it. Keep your employees. I didn't hear that from anybody. I'm more than disgusted with this. It seems to go nowhere quick.
Well, it's not done yet, so
I'm really hoping, that's why I'm here, this will go to more thought.
If you could follow up with just an email to us with those addresses, and what's the zoning that's proposed?
He knows.
Okay, all right, so just send us the addresses.
He damn well knows.
So send us the addresses, and we can follow up.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your time.
I think we did make a decision on this property, though.
We made a decision, and we may not have gotten it right, so that's why it's good to hear from you.
If I could add one more comment or correction, Martha was concerned about vesting rights for her project.
Right.
The project vests when they apply for the design review application, not when they apply for the building permit, so that shouldn't be an issue.
That was what I thought, but then what about her point that it would be a non-conforming use after we've changed it?
I think that's more of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I have many projects that are non-conforming that I've financed, but if there's a way to get that obstacle out of the way, I think they'd be better off making it conforming.
So I do have a question then, I guess. Since you did discuss this, what was the decision?
Well, if I think I've got the property,
you should know.
I think the property was changed to R1 on one portion of it and CM2 on the other, but I don't trust my memory. Right. That young woman right there is actually get her card, if you would, and send her.
We'll follow up. Thank you very much.
We'll follow up. So, thank you.
Unless it's Mary Ann Terrell Levine, was she here? Then the last three I show are Alan Brown, Brainerd Brower, and Scott Eaton.
Okay, come on up. You get the back cleanup. Thank you for waiting. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Brainerd Brower. I own some property on there, Southeast 13th and Powell, 12th and 13th and Powell. Mm-hmm. And this is in regards to commercial property. Just want to make the observation that this is the first notice that I think I've received on any specific changes. So just chiming in that was someone else's comment. Also, someone else's comment went to the point that the idea of preserving an owner's rights even if the zoning is changed. And that does ring a bell with me. I mean, it just seems like an idea worth thinking about. And then I have a slight prepared statement here. I have been the property owner since 1995 and worked hard on my properties in the neighborhood and to continue to improve it year to year.
Just give me the address again, please.
One of the addresses is 3205 Southeast 13th Avenue.
Thank you.
There's some
good.
Couple surrounding it as well.
Thank you.
I'm proud to have been an active participant in this progress. You know, crime has been reduced significantly and with the help and cooperation of many Portland police officers. My current zoning is CG, and it's proposed to go to CE. I find the change adds many more restrictions, including but not limited to setbacks to residential property. So the 3205 Southeast 13th abuts residential. The new CE zoning may have its place, but in this situation it reduces the incentives for revitalization, at least as I can see them at this time. I request my zoning to be left at CG. Or if not, provide some real incentives, move it to CX or something. I don't know. This is a critical time to get it right. As a point of perspective, the properties directly to the north of me, north of Powell and east of Southeast 11th Avenue, those properties are owned by the fire department, which are business being moved, probably partly PDC, TriMet interests, and some private development. That's being proposed to go to EX zoning, and that's a landlocked property from the north by the train and to the south by Powell. And those properties, you know, are probably not the best use for that kind of zoning, but at least that concern should be taken into account. And to push ahead, there was an idea passed on by an architect friend of mine that just made a suggestion. I want to pass it on. And that is that those properties, perhaps they would turn into a park area. One thing that whole region doesn't have is a park. But that park could be also a park zone that was a hub for pedestrian traffic, possibly even out of the norm, with a park and ride. That would give a central spot for pedestrian access and relieve tension on the Ross Island Bridge. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. And good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is Alan Brown, and I live with my wife at 1115 Northeast 60th Avenue in the southeast part of Rose City Park neighborhood. We are east of Normandale Park in an area I call East Normandale. We are currently zoned R5, and the proposal is to go to R1. Now, East Normandale is a 126-year-old neighborhood, making it the oldest section of the Rose City Park neighborhood. Indeed, we might even have the oldest house in Portland, but that discussion is for another time and place. In East Normandale, residents by and large oppose rezoning, as does the Rose City Park neighborhood. And you heard from our chairwoman, Tamara DeRitter, earlier. East Normandale cannot handle increased density without degrading the neighborhood's quality of life. Indeed, a 2011 study by the Portland Bureau of Transportation of another proposal to increase density in East Normandale concluded that increased density would cause traffic to fail in our area. Instead of rezoning our area, I would like you to focus on working with the residential infill proposal. Like others, I was not in favor of this, but as I looked at how development happened over the last century in my neighborhood, during which rules similar to residential infill were in place, I have to admit it worked out well for East Normandale. So-called middle housing is located in places that make sense and at a scale that works for the neighborhood. In contrast, some recent East Normandale projects developed under current zoning regulations are out of scale, poorly sited, and poorly located. So I ask you not to rezone East Normandale, and instead to join with neighborhoods to develop, refine, and broadly implement residential infill so that it works as well throughout Portland as it has worked in East Normandale. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What was your address again? I'm sorry.
1115.
1115 Northeast 60th. Okay, yes. Got it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Welcome.
Mayor, commissioners, thank you. I'm Scott Eaton. I am with the development group that is also involved with the NATO piece that was just referred to in Northwest Portland, south of Nicolai. I'd like to clarify that those properties are not in the Giles Lake Industrial Sanctuary. They never were. You did make a decision on these properties during our process with the comprehensive plan, where we worked with the Northwest Neighborhood Association, and you have received letters of support from the Northwest Neighborhood Association for the rezone that has taken place there in the comp plan. We worked together to come up with an R1 zone along Wilson, in this case, where we did middle housing at their request, and then kept the ability to do virtually the same uses that are there now, but also do potentially more residential there as well with the properties to the north. So I just wanted to clarify and speak on behalf of the Northwest Neighborhood Association and our development group for the work that we are trying to do there, because this area was identified as an area that for the past four decades has been completely underutilized. The streets are not developed. It is in a state of disrepair, and it is a place where improvement needs to be made.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, do we have any others, or is that the Is that the whole list?
That's everyone who signed up on the list.
Thank you. Yes. All. All right. Well, then, amazingly, it is 5 p.m. on the dot. Wow. I don't think we've ever managed this.
Dependable.
So we'll close the hearing, right, Eric? And next steps?
Hi, Eric Kingstrom, Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. So the decision you have to make now is, if you're ready to close the oral hearing, at what point would you like to close the written record? And I think staff has recommended that you hold it open until the end of day, midnight Friday, essentially, so that there's a little bit of time for folks.
At least that long, because we have been inviting people to send in testimony that they've provided today. So.
Well, I'm assuming you're not going to work on it over the weekend, so how about 8 o'clock on Monday?
8 a.m. Monday is fine as well if
you'd
prefer to do
that.
Let's
do that. Let's leave the record open until 8 a.m. Monday, and that way if people